B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at CLT_golf guy. As always, during the COVID-19 crisis, I hope that this podcast finds you all safe, healthy, and either playing or missing golf more than ever. On this week's show, we've got a slice of LPGA Tour player life during these times with our friend Brittany Altomare, but we begin with Ron Green Jr. and the earth-shaking news that was served up by he and his colleagues in the Global Golf Post this week about the dire, I mean dire, financial condition of the European Tour and how the PGA Tour is, for lack of a better term, going to ride in like a knight on a white horse. So, Ron, my phone rings this morning, and someone says, you get the Global Golf Post in your email box every day? I said, yeah. They said, have you seen it yet? I said, I've been working on some other things. They said, go right now. Your boy Green says the European Tour is over with. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What are you talking about? And he started to outline what you had written and your colleagues had written. And I said, look, here's what I know about Ron Green Jr. He's not one to print smoke unless there's fire somewhere. So let's just back up a little bit. I have known for some years that the European Tour was in financial difficulties. It does not surprise me that the global pandemic has really escalated things. How bad financially off is the European Tour right now?
I think that's a big question for everybody. Obviously, it's struggling. I mean, for all the challenges the PGA Tour has here, and I've heard it is losing, the PGA Tour loses between $10 and $15 million a week, I think, right now with no tournaments. I don't know that it's that big on the European Tour, but their return, planned return is pushed on down the line. They have to deal with not just, like we have states, they have countries they have to deal with and all the travel things. And, you know, it's not as lucrative. I mean, they don't play for as much money over there. The TV deals aren't worth as much, and basically the European Tour is funded, the bulk of it is funded by having the Ryder Cup every 4 years over there, and that underwrites a lot of what they what keeps them going. It's not all of it, but you know, it just as things have sort of unfolded and evolved over the past few years, it's gotten more and more challenging, I think, for them. And the PGA Tour obviously is operating from a position of strength, although, like everybody, less strength than we all had maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And I don't think the European Tour is not going away. The PGA Tour is not going in and swooping in and doing a hostile takeover. More than one person said who's involved in this said the PGA Tour absolutely wants the European Tour to survive, and is working to that end. Now, will the PGA Tour ultimately end up in a stronger position with some control and maybe some piece of that? I think there's some sort of consolidation, collaboration in the works. Now, how it all is going to look, I'm not sure anybody knows just yet, but I know that Keith Pelley of the European Tour and Jay Monahan of the PGA Tour have been in regular contact talking about this and other things. I mean, you know, there's so many things on the plate at one time now, given what the pandemic caused. First, there was for Jay Monahan, he had to deal with the PGA Tour media rights deals. And, I mean, that was a huge success for him, and he hardly got the chance to enjoy that because then suddenly the pandemic arrived. And
He enjoyed it for about, I think, 36 hours.
Yeah. And then suddenly, boom, this. And all along, the Premier Golf League was involved. It was there, and I think was far greater threat than we probably appreciated. We knew it was a serious challenge, but I think having talked to people, I mean, even through the Players' Championship, this is a very real thing. And I think that may have, almost certainly that brought the PGA Tour and the European Tour a little closer together out of necessity. Like, hey, if we're going to look at this challenge, we need to be able to coordinate some things. And again, exactly how it's all going to look when the dust settles and when we're 6 months, 12 months down the road, I'm not sure. But I think we're going to be a little bit be closer to maybe the sort of global type tour thing that we've heard talked about a lot. I think for sure the PGA Tour would love to get a piece of the Ryder Cup money from the European side. That's something the tour in some ways is left out of because they don't run here.
PGA of America
runs
America.
Here, and the European Tour runs there. So anyway, a lot going on, but you listen to read all the voices we have, especially from the European side, saying, hey, this is coming.
Thank you for mentioning the financial paradigm of the European Tour. It's the thing that jumped off the page at me, is that they are, if not wholly, majorly dependent upon Ryder Cup cash, and that's once every 4 years, basically. It's like hosting an Olympic Games, and you're basing your whole financial structure over an event that happens every 4 years. And I remember my father became dependent in his photography business more or less on one client. And when that one client got bought out in a merger, all of a sudden my dad's business got in trouble. This is no way to run a business. I'm sort of stunned that the European Tour hasn't done better at seeking out other revenue sources than the Ryder Cup for all these years.
Well, I think they've done well. I mean, they landed the Rolex Series, which is a very big deal over there. And I mean, I may be talking out of school. I want to say that's about a $50 million annual investment there. I mean, that's a big investment, but they put it into like six events and raised the purses to try to put them on par with PGA Tour events. I think most of the, again, I may have my numbers wrong, I want to say the European Tour is around $2.5-3 million a purse. And when the Rolex events, they jumped them up $5-7 million trying to attract more players that way. I don't know that they've gotten quite the return on their investment they wanted in that way. It maybe hasn't quite captured the imagination the way it sounded like it might. But I think it's obviously a different economy, a different model over there, and different challenges. I don't know when you're playing, I think you have a handful of events. I think you got Dubai, you got Abu Dhabi, you got the Scottish, the Irish, and the British Opens. You got some.
Got the BMW
later in the year. Yeah. You got the, obviously Wentworth is a huge.
Right.
So those are, those are the handful of events that sort of make the European Tour. I think the rest of them, they have tournaments, but I don't think. Nobody's going to compare them to the Wells Fargo Championship.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. I'm so thankful you brought that up. I was talking about this with someone earlier today, and I mentioned those exact tournaments that you did. The Scottish, the Irish, the BMW at Wentworth. These are tournaments that you watch on TV on the Golf Channel, and not only do they feel like big events the way they're being covered, but when you look at the galleries, they look like a major league PGA Tour event. Whereas if you watch on a random week on the European Tour, and it's like the Scandinavian Masters, it roughly resembles a high school tournament with parents and friends following golfers around, and it just doesn't have that big-time feel to it. Should this merger start to happen, would you see or could you envision a major contraction in the schedule of the European Tour?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I think there's multiple people said it would help everybody if there were fewer tournaments all around. Obviously, bonuses are tied for administrators to total purses or to charitable dollars given, and nobody wants to back away from that. But I think there's a lot of tournaments, and one of the people I was talking to said, in reality, the PGA Tour is already two tours. There's the tour that the stars play with the majors and the WGCs and Jack's event, Arnie's event, Tiger's event, and 15, 16, 17 tournaments you could sort of circle. And then the other tournaments that sort of the rank and file tend to play more. And I don't know that this won't further sort of crystallize where the top players play and whether the schedule is set up so that it's more conducive if tour players want to go over and play the Irish and Scottish and sort of make it a three-week run through the UK or whatever. Maybe that happens. I don't know. Maybe it's television money, how it all works. I really don't know. And as anybody who knows me could tell you, I am not a businessman. I mean, I can get to 2 plus 2 equals 4, and that's about it. And and I don't have a good sense of the business model, but I think one thing that has emerged in this from the time, whatever, March 12th on, is Jay Monahan is leader, as a leader, has become more and more prominent, more powerful. I mean, I think he's sort of guiding the ship. I mean, he worked. I mean, I was told, you know, the U.S. Open wanted to move to December. They wanted to go to Riviera, and they were going to play there. And if they did that, it was going to just basically destroy the European Tour season. They couldn't have one because they couldn't fill to a finish with the Masters in November and the U.S. Open in December and have the race to Dubai and all that. And they convinced the U.S. Open, I think Jay helped convince the U.S. Open to move back to September and let Europe have their finale there in December if everything comes off as scheduled. But, you know, talking to several leaders of these organizations, I mean, they are just effusive in their praise and respect and admiration for the way Jay Monahan operates. I mean, he, you know, he's smart, obviously, but he also, there's a compassion and a heartfelt side to what he does. I mean, you know, would Tim Finch approach this differently? Maybe. I mean, they're very strikingly different guys and different commissioner styles, but they face different challenges and opportunities. And I think Jay wants to make sure, as one leader said, it's like rather than trying to throw everybody into one lifeboat off a sinking ship and figuring the lifeboat's going to sink, he wants to take time, get everybody one at a time off and get them to safety and go from there. And I think he's really concerned about the overall interest of the game and, you know, obviously on his level, the professional game.
That's Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. And when we return, he continues to take dead aim at and walk us through the dire financial straits of the European Tour, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and we continue now with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post. Earlier this week, he and his colleagues, earth-shattering news about the dire financial condition of the European Tour.
Could a merger, or the merger's the wrong word, could an influx in financial capital, a major influx of financial capital from the PGA Tour, also spell, to a certain extent, a major cutting back of the Korn Ferry Tour? Could we see, to use that word, merger somehow between some of the Korn Ferry Tour events and the European Tour?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think, you know, they've had to, both the Champions Tour and the Korn Ferry have had to be dramatically restructured this year, as is everything else, but and actually spun in one season, at least on the Korn Ferry level, spun into two seasons. I mean, the, you know, if you're David Coker or Davis Riley or somebody sitting there in the top five in the Korn Ferry money list right now thinking you're good to go to make that top 25 and be on the PGA Tour when it restarts in September, well, not so fast. Now you've got to get all the way to the next year, through the end of next year. I think that's a sort of separate thing. Now, could, I don't know, just imagine, could there be a way that you could, if you finish a certain place, you could earn eligibility on the European Tour, or could European Tour players play their way onto the Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour? You know, I don't think the European Tour sees itself as feeding the Korn Ferry Tour. But, I go back to a year or so ago with Kapalua, the first, I think it was there, that Rory McIlroy was talking about why he's going to play in the United States and, you know, set up around the PGA Tour. Basically said that the European Tour had become a feeder tour to the PGA Tour, which didn't sit well with a lot of people over there. And I think Rory sort of didn't like the way it sounded, but he had a point there that just because the money and the opportunities are so great over here,
Well, yeah, now, I remember watching, you know, in the as late as the early to mid 80s, when you would watch the Ryder Cup, you were seeing players for the European side that you never saw. I mean, it was sort of mystery to, you know, who is this guy? Why haven't I heard of him? You know, maybe he played in the Masters or qualified for the U.S. Open. You saw him in the Open Championship, maybe, but you just didn't see him on a week in, week out basis. Everybody who plays for the European Ryder Cup team, you know their name, rank, serial number, wives and children. We're very familiar with them now because they play over here all the time. What Rory said is absolutely correct.
Yeah, and plus the good percentage of them live over here. I mean, you know, Rory and Ian Poulter and all those guys, I mean, they live down there in Florida and they see each other all the time. So, you know, it's a different dynamic. You know, I think one other thing that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out is, I mean, the PGA Tour is obviously in a good position, I had somebody who is involved in the business side of it tell me, said, you know, they're losing a whole lot of money and their reserves, you know, that they like to keep are dwindling. They're going to have to spend a lot of money to get those back to where they feel comfortable with them. And so suddenly the notion of going and investing all this money in another tour is like, wait a minute, we got to figure that out. I mean, I think it's going to look different when the tour comes back over time. Will it get back to what it is? I hope it does, but I think they're going to have to, you know, how many corporate sponsors are coming back? I don't know. I mean, you look across the board and some of them, maybe their industries are hit so hard that can they afford to invest the money they're investing right now? What does that mean? A lot of questions, you know, I mean, while we're just looking to see if they actually do get to June to restart the PGA Tour at Colonial, which, you know, that's a whole other question there.
Well, you know, one thing that was brought up in a conversation I had with Peter Costas last week was he was talking about, okay, the tour restarts. How can you do that on a world golf ranking standpoint when all the other tours haven't started back up? Do you just do away with world golf rankings? And, you know, a lot of people's bonuses and incentives are tied to these and getting into big-time tournaments. There's more than just we're going to have a tournament this week. Have you heard anyone address the world golf ranking situation?
Well, I think they've been ever addressed in terms of questions. I don't think anybody's gotten any real answers. Obviously, they sort of suspended it for the time being, which, you know, whether they had to or didn't have to, I mean, there was nobody playing, so nothing was really going to change. You know, you could take, I guess, weeks off, and that would change points as the weeks clicked off the calendar. But, yeah, I think those are all sorts of things, you know, and you've got to try to figure out. I mean, just reading the revised eligibility criteria that the PGA Tour sent out last week about who, you know, if you're a member this year, you get to maintain your eligibility all through next year, but what if you're 126 to 150? How does that work? What if you're on a major medical? I mean, there's so many things that are, you know, beyond just getting there and teeing it up, and whether they're going to have bunker rakes and flag sticks, and does your caddy have to put the bag down and then let you pull the club, and all those things they're talking about. I like everybody, I hope it comes back sooner rather than later, but I think it's a long road from here to Texas right now.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. Our guest taking dead aim, he and his colleagues at the Global Golf Post have done a magnificent job outlining the dire financial situation of the European Tour. One thing that came out in a couple of different spots in the Global Golf Post that I think is a very interesting caveat, and you've already mentioned it, is the Ryder Cup. Should the PGA Tour invest and become a major stockholder in the European Tour, for lack of a better term, they're going to have a piece of the Ryder Cup and the Ryder Cup money. The whole reason why the PGA Tour started the President's Cup was because they were PO'd that they didn't get any piece of the Ryder Cup that is owned and operated and run by the PGA of America. For years and years, these organizations have, well, not exactly been the best of friends. How are the PGA Tour and the PGA of America getting along these days, and how do you see them coexisting in a Ryder Cup situation?
Well, I think they've worked together through this whole scheduling thing. I think there's so many moving parts to it, and I know that there's been I don't know if it's an email or a text chain, but with like the Seth Walls and Mike Davises and Jay Monahans of the world, I mean, staying in regular contact, daily contact, as they sort of work through this. And I don't think they could have gotten to where they are and when they announced the new schedule without a lot of cooperation and collaboration. And I think, and I know just from knowing them, I know both Jay and Seth Wall, you know, really like each other, get along well. I think they both absolutely have they want to do what's best for the game. Now they have their own organizations, and you know, Seth Wall in charge of the PGA of America is more worried about, you know, the working club professionals and how, you know, tens of thousands of those and what they mean to the game and advancing the game that way, while Jay has the business of the PGA Tour. But I think in the end, they want to work together, and I think that I don't see that being a big problem.
Another major investor, for lack of a better term, in the European Tour as it stands right now is there's a significant amount of money funneled into that tour via major tournaments and whatnot from the Middle East, whether it be Dubai, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And I bring up the Kingdom for this reason. They have some rather controversial actions towards American journalists in particular that did not sit well with a lot of our players and the PGA Tour. Is that a relationship that, should the PGA Tour become involved with the European Tour, would have to be re-examined and re-examined hard?
I mean, I'm sure that would be a subject of some discussion. You know, there was obviously a lot of talk about some of the money behind the Premier Golf League being from Saudi Arabia, and that they have used, that country is using sports as a way to grow its sort of international reputation and cast itself, you know, look over here, look what we're doing with this. I'm sure those are all questions that would be resolved. And again, we don't know how it's going to look, how big a outward change we're going to see when this all gets put together. Because again, I don't know that it's just suddenly we're going to flip a switch one day, the release is going to come out and here's what we've done and here's how it's going to look and work. Maybe that's what it is, but I think those are all pieces in the process to be taken care of down the road.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. A couple of these tours were mentioned throughout the pieces in the Global Golf Post this week, and I commend everyone to read this. It's really a well-done job outlining the dire financial situation of the European Tour. Little tours, and I say little tours, that's the wrong thing to say. The Sunshine Tour in South Africa, the Australasian Tour, the Asian tours. What is going to become of them? What are their financial situations? And are they just going to go away, or are they going to be looking for the PGA Tour to give them a handout too?
I think it's a challenge for all of them. I think it's probably been a challenge from the outset. I had one manager of some prominent players say, you know, there are too many players who believe that professional golf is an avenue to make a living, that this will cut some of them out, that because there's going to be less money, that this is needed to come. These tours don't make money. They don't really make livings on it, but it sort of fosters the notion that, hey, you can get out there and make your living playing golf, when in fact that's not the case. So I think in those instances, I think what was a challenge becomes an even bigger challenge. I think we're going to see, I know we've been told that big equipment deals for the young stars coming out are gone. I mean, the Hovlands and the Morikawas and the Matthew Wolfs may have hit the last big gold rush for equipment deals that, you know, for the established players, they're probably going to be rolled back some, and they're basically going to be just a shadow of what they used to be for the next generation coming out, just because of the nature. I mean, you know, when you look at Callaway and Titleist and what they've been going through, I mean, that's to be shut down this long and to have very little golf being played and no golf shopping. I mean, there's going to be a lot of inventory when things start going. I would think you could probably get some specials, but, you know, the economy has hit everybody. Now people are suddenly going to go spend $500 on a new driver or $1,000 on a set of irons. I think it's a harsh sort of recalibrating of the industry.
One final quick thing. Should all this come to pass, should the PGA Tour become a financial partner or backer of the European Tour, just spitballing a timetable, what would you say? You talk about waking up one morning and there being an announcement. How far off could that morning be? And between the announcement and implementation, what are we looking at time-wise?
Exactly what form it takes remains to be seen, but I would think there's so much to be done right now in terms of just getting the game going again, and we're still a month out if you don't count the Ricky Rory match down there at Seminole. I think I'd give it a year. I think once they get going and think about how busy the fall is going to be with all those events that are scheduled, and then maybe by once you sort of get the calendar flipped and get a sense of normalcy, I'm guessing a year, but I mean, you could put four numbers in a cup and let me draw one out blindly, and I'd probably say that one's as good a chance as any of them.
Tell you what, it's not just earth-shattering news. It's really good journalism. I commend it to you from all the guys at the Global Golf Post. Look it up online, globalgolfpost.com, and that man in particular, Ron Green Jr. And up next, a little slice of the LPGA Tour player life during the coronavirus crisis, courtesy of our friend Brittany Altomare, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. So not a lot has been said about what's going on. What's the plan with the LPGA Tour? Well, let's hit on it now with our longtime friend of the show, LPGA Tour player and Solheim Cup maven Brittany Altomare. All right, so the first question that everyone wants to know is how are you doing? Are you doing okay? All your family and loved ones doing okay?
Yeah, everybody's great. Most of my family is back in Massachusetts, but everybody's good and healthy, and I'm here in Florida. Everything's pretty good.
Yeah, you made the right move not going back up to Massachusetts. You're a lot better off down in Florida. Newly engaged to Brittany Altomare and a new homeowner in Florida. So has this time given you a chance to sort of, I don't know, break in the new house a little bit and take care of all the things that normally take the rest of us about 6 months?
Yeah, at first. Yes, we had painters in here. They were painting, and then when things got pretty bad, our building didn't allow contractors into the building. So we've actually been staring at our painter's stuff in our place for, like, the last month. and we haven't obviously been able to get anything done because they're not allowing anybody into the building. But we got some good news at the end of last week saying that they are now allowing them back in. So we actually have people coming tomorrow to finish up the painting. So I'm really excited to get their stuff out of our place and just to have it all painted and finished.
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit to the, second week in March. You were getting ready, I assume, to head out to Palm Springs for the first major of the year. Where were you when you got the news that things were shutting down? How fast did it happen? In other words, how fast did you go from everything is normal to all of a sudden there's no LPGA Tour for the time being?
Yeah, I remember everything happened, like, super fast. I think the night before we got the email saying that our next three events were canceled, like, the NBA was shutting down, the NHL was shutting down, like, all these majors, it, like, happened, like, all in a row, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is going on? And then we got the email from Mike Wan, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think he made the right decision, and, you know, keeping everybody safe and healthy, and it was just weird because the PGA was playing, and they had to stop their event, like, in the middle of it, which, you know, at least we weren't at a tournament when it all happened, but Yeah.
Look, you know, I regard Mike Wann as maybe the best commissioner of any sport in professional sports right now. It sounds like things were happening real fast, so this may be an unfair question, but do you feel like the communication lines were open enough, or were you guys just in the dark as to what was going on, or did you have some text threads going with some players that were in the know? How did all that work?
I think it was always like a question. Like, I think it wasn't really like a guarantee that we were going to play that stretch on the West Coast, just because at that time, I think California was being hit the hardest.
Right.
So I think we were all nervous about California. We were thinking like we might be able to play Arizona, but I think at the end of the day, I think I can speak for all of us saying that everybody trusts Mike and his decision.
Absolutely.
We're just following his lead because, you know, he's just been so great for our tour.
Yeah. He's earned that respect. Brittany Altomare with the LPGA Tour is our guest taking Dead Aim. One thing that is sure the PGA Tour has some Asian players as part of their makeup, but it's nowhere near the contingent that the LPGA Tour has. They were dealing with this for a couple of months, big time, back in their home countries before we were. Did they kind of warn you guys what was coming? Were you guys, you know, how much of a help in terms of communication were the girls on the LPGA Tour who are Asians?
I think that it was just all, like, everybody just kind of had the same information. I didn't really honestly talk to them. I think the time where the last time we were all together was at the Australian Open when things were happening and, you know, our Thailand and Singapore events got canceled. But, you know, I didn't really talk to much of them about that. I think... Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest with you.
I know that one of the things you love most about being a professional golfer, you love to play golf, but you've also really grown to love the travel. And it's something that's part of your DNA as a professional on the LPGA Tour. You'll probably do more traveling than the men's tour just by basis of having to go twice a year overseas to the Far East. Is that something that you're, I don't know if this is the right word, that you're somewhat addicted to? Is that something that you find yourself missing, is the travel aspect and being home more than you've been home probably in the last 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I love to travel. I mean, it's one of my favorite parts about what I do. And, I mean, this is probably the longest I've ever not been on an airplane or in an airport or a hotel or what, like all those things. And I am really itching to just get out and travel again and play again. I mean, I think that's what I'm really looking forward to most. It's weird. I will say it's so weird being at home this long and not have, like, when I was on my American Airlines app, I usually have like 14, 15, you know, flights scheduled, and now I have like none. So that's even weirder to like open my app and not really have anything scheduled. So it's definitely different, but I mean, I guess eventually this is what my life is going to be like. So I guess I'm getting a glimpse into what my future holds after the LPGA.
Now, you know, we mentioned that you're newly engaged. You and your fiance have been living in a different paradigm than most of us, in that you guys see each other, you know, here and there, and it's really special when you're together. And then Brittany goes off for 3 weeks and goes plays professional golf. What has this been like? You know, being like your mom and dad and being together all the time, has this made you rethink the whole engagement thing?
Well, yeah, no, it hasn't.
Oh, okay.
But it definitely is weird. I mean, we're definitely enjoying our time together. Like you said, it's like the most time we've ever spent together. But I think it's good. It's good for us. And, yeah, we've had a lot of fun. It's been nice being in a new place. I think that's helped a lot, so...
Brittany Altomare is on the LPGA Tour. She's our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's talk golf for a second. When you knew that the tour was shutting down, at least initially for 3 or 4 weeks, I think was the initial announcement, and it wasn't long after that that you figured out, okay, we're going to be shut down for a while longer. Did you put down the clubs for a while, or have you always maintained a practice regimen? I know that the Florida golf courses, you know, I'm in North Carolina. Our golf courses have never closed. I think Florida has stayed open as well. Did you maintain your practice and workout routines? I know you couldn't go to a gym, but in terms of practice, or did you stick the clubs in a closet for a while?
When they first canceled our West Coast leg, I did take a week off. So, like, there's, you know, maybe just give the body a rest. But, you know, I haven't really been practicing that much. I've, because, I mean, we're still, like, 9 weeks out from what is hopefully going to be our first event. So I've been going out and playing once in a while, like, a couple times a week, but not really practicing. And then I'm trying to build like an off season, you know, like usually 6 weeks out from a tournament, like our first tournament, I'll start really practicing again. So I think in a couple weeks from now, I'll start really ramping up my practice as if I'm going to get ready for a tournament. But I just don't see the point in putting all that stress on my body for something that's still pretty far out.
Is it fun for you a little bit to just be able to go play golf and just enjoy playing golf without having to grind getting ready again?
Yeah, for now, but I think I really miss the competitiveness of tournament golf. I mean, that's honestly, if I were to say, like, besides the travel, like, one thing that I just absolutely love about the LPGA is just the competitive golf. Like, I think that's why I wanted to be a professional golfer. You know, I do have this competitive side of me that, you know, gets fulfilled on the LPGA, and I love tournament golf. I love the pressure and, you know, that nervous feeling or adrenaline feeling, like, you don't really get those in everyday golf, so I definitely miss that so much.
No, and people don't understand, when you have competed at a high level in any sport for a prolonged period of time, that competitive Jones, that's an addiction that does not go away in life. And
no.
what you find is that when you do other things, you find ways to compete with either yourself or with others. I mean, it drove my kid crazy. He's never been allowed to win, quote unquote, win at anything. If he beats me, he worked at it. He didn't beat me in checkers till he was in sixth grade. I mean, you know, that's just how, you know, we rolled in our house because I'm addicted to that competition. And so I totally get that. Do you find yourself being uber competitive in other facets of your life just because that's in your DNA?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to lose. So anything that has, like, a loser and a winner, like, I just want to win. It's fun. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if this is the same, but at the beginning of this, I did 2 puzzles on my own. Stephen was no help, but anyways.
Shots fired.
I just, like, was so determined to finish it. Like, I would stay up all, like, I would do it all day. I just, like, couldn't put it down. Like, I just needed to finish it. It was like a race to the finish, like, how fast I could do it. And I haven't done a puzzle since, because it literally takes up my entire day.
Yeah, but no, that's part. No, you're right. That's part of that competitive Jones. You're setting an internal goal for yourself. I can't walk away until I get this finished. And your body literally does not allow you to do that. That's totally.
Yeah.
And I wish you people could meet Brittany's fiance. There's not a more chill guy in the whole world. So it totally works. I get it. Brittany Altomare is our guest taking Dead Aim. She, of course, on the LPGA Tour. You talk a little bit about the difference between just playing golf and ramping things up in your practice. Sort of give the lay person an idea about what we're talking about. If you're playing 18 holes just so you don't get completely rusty versus 18 holes in another 4 weeks when you're starting to think towards competitive golf, how does that 18 holes change for you? What sort of things do you do differently?
When I'm just going out to play, it's just kind of like you said, just to stay, just so I don't get rusty. But now, like, when I start playing again, like, to really practice, you know, it starts to be, like, you know, I'll set goals. Like, I want to, yeah, just, like, little games and goals. And, like, sometimes, like, the girls at the golf course, like, we'll play matches just to get some sort of competitiveness going and feeling of, like, I have to make a putt or, you know, pull off a shot. So I think it's just, like, goals. It's more goal-oriented and more just competitiveness between other players and stuff. So
now, we've talked before. I know where you are down in Florida. there's a contingent of other professional athletes, football and specifically professional baseball players. And with baseball having had spring training down there, I know a lot of guys were staying in Florida. Have some of your baseball players hung around, and are they playing against you on the golf course?
I haven't seen many of them, actually. I think, I don't know really what they're doing, but, yeah, I have no idea. But I think they're trying to stay busy working out, because I think they don't really know when their season's going to start either. So,
Brittany Altomare, LPGA Tour professional, our guest taking Dead Aim. Get you out of here on this. You mentioned that the LPGA Tour does not begin in earnest for another 9 weeks, fingers crossed. How has your playing schedule or planned playing schedule for the year been altered? How many events, when we get started back, are you planning on playing out of the gate? I know that you learn early on in your career that you can only do, for you, 3-4 weeks tops before you need a break, but you've been on break forever. Do you feel like you're going to try to play as much as possible?
Honestly, like, I've been looking at our schedule, trying to figure that out myself. I think we have something, if everything stays the same, I think we have something crazy, like 16 events in a row or something, and obviously cannot play 16 events in a row. But I might do a stretch of 5 weeks just because, but, I mean, I'll definitely have to take some breaks here and there just because I don't know if my body can handle all that time on the road. And you know, it's nice to come back and see my coach and just make sure everything is still synced up. Because, you know, if you're not playing well, I think it's best to come home, regroup, and get out there again. So I think I'll be having a little bit longer of stints this time, but definitely going to need to have some breaks in there, too, just for my sanity.
Now, forgive me, I have not looked at the schedule completely. You know, the men's tour, the Open Championship is not happening, so there's only three majors. The LPGA has five majors. The schedule that's out, how many majors remain on the schedule?
I think as of right now, there's still all five.
Really?
They've been able to reschedule, yeah. I think we play three events in the States, and then we're supposed to go to Europe for 3 weeks. I think it goes like Evian, Scottish, British. I mean, as of right now, it's on our schedule, but obviously, like, anything can change, so...
From the LPGA Tour, that's our friend Brittany Altomare. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. for his time and insight this week on the financial crisis that the European Tour is facing. I commend his work and the work of his colleagues to you, globalgolfpost.com. Want to remind you to keep up with us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim and give us a like. Featured there now, links to articles on the latest goings on in and around the game. And you know, I've said it before and I'll keep saying it in these times, golf may be the best way to get some good exercise, plenty of ultraviolets and the vitamin D while being able to practice safe distancing. And for gosh sakes, wash your hands all the time. And if you're able to get out and do it, tee it up. Enjoy letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, @CLT_golf guy. And I'll see you right here very soon. Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.